Chapter 131. George Woolwich, Quebec, Malta. This is her birthday. Take a day's march, and you won't find such another. Here's towards her. The toast having been drunk with enthusiasm, Mrs. Bagnet returns thanks in a neat address of corresponding brevity. This model composition is limited to the three words, and wishing yours, which the old girl follows up with a nod at everybody in succession, and a well-regulated swig of the mixture. This she again follows up, on the present occasion, by the wholly unexpected exclamation, "Here's a man! Here's a man!" much to the astonishment of the little company, looking in at the parlor door. He is a sharp-eyed man, a quick, keen man, and he takes in everybody's look at him, all at once, individually, and collectively, in a manner that stamps him a remarkable man. "George," says the man, nodding, "how do you find yourself?" "Why, it's Bucket," cries Mr. George. "Yes," says the man, coming in and closing the door. "I was going down the street here, when I happened to stop, and look in at the musical instruments. In the shop window a friend of mine is in want of a second-hand violinceller of a good tone, and I saw a party enjoying themselves, and I thought it was you in the corner. I thought I couldn't be mistaken. How goes the world with you, George, at the present moment? Pretty smooth? And with you, ma'am? And with you, governor? And Lord," says Mr. Bucket, opening his arms, "here's children too. You may do anything with me, if you only show me children. Give us a kiss, my pets. No occasion to inquire who your father and mother is. Never saw such a likeness in my life." Mr. Bucket, not unwelcome, has sat himself down next to Mr. George, and taken Quebec and Malta on his knees. "You pretty dears," says Mr. Bucket, "give us another kiss. It's the only thing I'm greedy inches. Lord bless you, how healthy you look. And what may be the ages of these two, ma'am? I should put 'em down at the figures of about 8 and 10. "You're very near, sir," says Mrs. Bagnet. "I generally am near," returns Mr. Bucket, "being so fond of children. A friend of mine has had 19 of 'em, ma'am, all by one mother, and she's still as fresh and rosy as the morning. Not so much so as yourself, but, upon my soul, she comes near you. And what do you call these, my darling?" pursues Mr. Bucket, pinching Malta's cheeks. "These are peaches, these are. Bless your heart. And what do you think about father? Do you think father could recommend a second-hand violinceller of a good tone for Mr. Bucket's friend, my dear? My name's Bucket. Ain't that a funny name? These blandishments have entirely won the family heart. Mrs. Bagnet forgets the day to the extent of filling a pipe and a glass for Mr. Bucket and waiting upon him hospitably. She would be glad to receive so pleasant a character under any circumstances, but she tells him that as a friend of George's she is particularly glad to see him this evening, for George has not been in his usual spirits." "Not in his usual spirits?" exclaims Mr. Bucket. "Why, I never heard of such a thing. What's the matter, George? You don't intend to tell me you've been out of spirits? What should you be out of spirits for? You haven't got anything on your mind, you know." "Nothing particular," returns the trooper. "I should think not," rejoins Mr. Bucket. "What could you have on your mind, you know? And have these pets got anything on their minds, eh? Not they, but they'll be upon the minds of some of the young fellows, some of these days, and make 'em precious low-spirited. I ain't much of a prophet, but I can tell you that, ma'am." Mrs. Bagnet, quite charmed, hopes Mr. Bucket has a family of his own. "There, ma'am," says Mr. Bucket. "Would you believe it? No, I haven't. My wife and a lodger constitute my family. Mrs. Bucket is as fond of children as myself, and as wishful to have 'em, but no. So it is. Worldly goods are divided unequally, and man must not repine. What a very nice backyard, ma'am. Any way out of that yard, now?" "There is no way out of that yard." "Ain't there really?" says Mr. Bucket. I should have thought there might have been. Well, I don't know as I ever saw a backyard that took my fancy more. Would you allow me to look at it? Thank you. No, I see there's no way out. But what a very good proportioned yard it is. Having cast his sharp eye all about it, Mr. Bucket returns to his chair next his friend Mr. George, and pats Mr. George affectionately on the shoulder. How are your spirits now, George? All right now, returns the trooper. That's your sort, says Mr. Bucket. Why should you ever have been otherwise? A man of your fine figure and constitution has no right to be out of spirits. That ain't a chest to be out of spirits, is it, ma'am? And you haven't got anything on your mind, you know, George. What could you have on your mind? Somewhat harping on this phrase, considering the extent and variety of his conversational powers, Mr. Bucket twice or thrice repeats it to the pipe he lights, and with a listening face that is particularly his own. But the sun of his sociality soon recovers from this brief eclipse and shines again. And this is brother, is it, my dears? Says Mr. Bucket, referring to Quebec and Malta for information on the subject of young Woolwich. And a nice brother he is, half-brother I mean to say. For he's too old to be your boy, ma'am. I can certify at all events that he is not anybody else's, returns Mrs. Bagnet, laughing. Well, you do surprise me. Yet he's like you, there's no denying. Lord, he's wonderfully like you. But about what you may call the brow, you know, there his father comes out. Mr. Bucket compares the faces with one eye shut up, while Mr. Bagnet smokes in stolid satisfaction. This is an opportunity for Mrs. Bagnet to inform him that the boy is George's godson. George's godson, is he? Rejoins Mr. Bucket with extreme cordiality. I must shake hands over again with George's godson. Godfather and godson do credit to one another. And what do you intend to make of him, ma'am? Does he show any turn for any musical instrument? Mr. Bagnet suddenly interposes, plays the fife. Beautiful. Would you believe it, Governor, says Mr. Bucket, struck by the coincidence, that when I was a boy I played the fife myself? Not in a scientific way, as I expect he does, but by ear. Lord bless you. British Grenadiers, there's a tune to warm an Englishman up. Could you give us British Grenadiers, apostrophe my fine fellow? Nothing could be more acceptable to the little circle than this call upon young Woolwich, who immediately fetches his fife and performs the stirring melody, during which performance Mr. Bucket, much enlivened, beats time and never falls to come in sharp with the burden, British Grenadiers. In short, he shows so much musical taste that Mr. Bagnet actually takes his pipe from his lips to express his conviction that he is a singer. Mr. Bucket receives the harmonious impeachment so modestly, confessing how that he did once chaunt a little for the expression of the feelings of his own bosom, and with no presumptuous idea of entertaining his friends, that he is asked to sing. Not to be behindhand in the sociality of the evening, he complies and gives them, believe me, if all those endearing young charms. This ballad, he informs Mrs. Bagnet, he considers to have been his most powerful ally in moving the heart of Mrs. Bucket when a maiden, and inducing her to approach the altar. Mr. Bucket's own words are to come up to the scratch. This sparkling stranger is such a new and agreeable feature in the evening that Mr. George, who testified no great emotions of pleasure on his entrance, begins, in spite of himself, to be rather proud of him. He is so friendly, is a man of so many resources, and so easy to get on with, that it is something to have made him known there. Mr. Bagnet becomes, after another pipe, so sensible of the value of his acquaintance, that he solicits the honor of his company on the old girl's next birthday. If anything can more closely cement and consolidate the esteem which Mr. Bucket has formed for the family, it is the discovery of the nature of the occasion. He drinks to Mrs. Bagnet with a warmth approaching to rapture, engages himself for that day 12 months more than thankfully, makes a memorandum of the day in a large black pocketbook with a girdle to it, and breathes a hope that Mrs. Bucket and Mrs. Bagnet may before then become, in a manner, sisters. As he says himself, what is public life without private ties? He is in his humble way a public man, but it is not in that sphere that he finds happiness. No, it must be sought within the confines of domestic bliss. It is natural, under these circumstances, that he, in his turn, should remember the friend to whom he is indebted for so promising an acquaintance. And he does. He keeps very close to him. Whatever the subject of the conversation, he keeps a tender eye upon him. He waits to walk home with him. He is interested in his very boots, and observes even them attentively as Mr. George sits smoking cross-legged in the chimney corner. At length Mr. George rises to depart. At the same moment Mr. Bucket, with the secret sympathy of friendship, also rises. He dotes upon the children to the last, and remembers the commission he has undertaken for an absent friend. Respecting that second-hand while insular, Governor, could you recommend me such a thing? Scores, says Mr. Bagnet. I am obliged to you, returns Mr. Bucket, squeezing his hand. You're a friend in need. A good tone, mind you. My friend is a regular dab at it. Ecod, he saws away at Mozart and Handel, and the rest of the big wigs like a thorough workman. And you need, says Mr. Bucket in a considerate and private voice, you needn't commit yourself to too low a figure, Governor. I don't want to pay too large a price for my friend, but I want you to have your proper percentage, and be remunerated for your loss of time. That is but fair. Every man must live, and ought to it. Mr. Bagnet shakes his head at the old girl to the effect that they have found a jewel of price. Suppose I was to give you a look in, say, at 10:30 tomorrow morning. Perhaps you could name the figures of a few while insulars of a good tone? Says Mr. Bucket. Nothing easier. Mr. and Mrs. Bagnet both engage to have the requisite information ready, and even hint to each other at the practicability of having a small stock collected there for approval. Thank you, says Mr. Bucket, thank you. Good night, ma'am. Good night, Governor. Good night, darlings. I am much obliged to you for one of the pleasantest evenings I ever spent in my life. They, on the contrary, are much obliged to him for the pleasure he has given them in his company, and so they part with many expressions of goodwill on both sides. Now, George, old boy, says Mr. Bucket, taking his arm at the shop door, come along. As they go down the little street, and the Bagnets pause for a minute looking after them, Mrs. Bagnet remarks to the worthy Lignum that Mr. Bucket almost clings to George-like, and seems to be really fond of him. The neighboring streets being narrow and ill-paved, it is a little inconvenient to walk there two abreast, and arm in arm. Mr. George therefore soon proposes to walk singly. But Mr. Bucket, who cannot make up his mind to relinquish his friendly hold, replies, wait 30 minutes, George. I should wish to speak to you first. Immediately afterwards, he twists him into a public house and into a parlor, where he confronts him, and claps his own back against the door. Now, George, says Mr. Bucket, duty is duty, and friendship is friendship. I never want the two to clash, if I can help it. I have endeavored to make things pleasant tonight, and I put it to you, whether I have done it or not. You must consider yourself in custody, George. Custody? What for? Returns the trooper, thunderstruck. Now, George, says Mr. Bucket, urging a sensible view of the case upon him with his fat forefinger, duty, as you know very well, is one thing, and conversation is another. It's my duty to inform you that any observations you may make will be liable to be used against you. Therefore, George, be careful what you say. You don't happen to have heard of a murder? Murder? Now, George, says Mr. Bucket, keeping his forefinger in an impressive state of action, bear in mind what I've said to you. I ask you nothing. You've been in low spirits this afternoon. I say, you don't happen to have heard of a murder? No. Where has there been a murder? Now, George, says Mr. Bucket, don't you go and commit yourself. I'm a going to tell you what I want you for. There has been a murder in Lincoln's Inn Fields, gentleman of the name of Tulkinghorn. He was shot last night. I want you for that. The trooper sinks upon a seat behind him, and great drops start out upon his forehead, and a deadly pallor overspreads his face. Bucket. It's not possible that Mr. Tulkinghorn has been killed, and that you suspect me? George, returns Mr. Bucket, keeping his forefinger going, it is certainly possible, because it's the case. This deed was done last night at 10 o'clock. Now, you know where you were last night at 10 o'clock, and you'll be able to prove it, no doubt. Last night. Last night? Repeats the trooper thoughtfully. Then it flashes upon him. Why, great heaven, I was there last night. So I have understood. George, returns Mr. Bucket with great deliberation. So I have understood. Likewise, you've been very often there. You've been seen hanging about the place, and you've been heard more than once in a wrangle with him, and it's possible, I don't say it's certainly so, mind you, but it's possible that he may have been heard to call you a threatening, murdering, dangerous fellow. The trooper gasps, as if he would admit it all, if he could speak. Now, George, continues Mr. Bucket, putting his hat upon the table with an air of business rather in the upholstery way than otherwise, my wish is, as it has been all the evening, to make Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.